session number 18490, real one.
Ken Smith, real one. Where were you born, please?
In Portsmouth.
Which year was this?
1922, 12th of April.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Portsmouth?
Yes, down in Portsea, just beneficial school. It was one of the oldest schools in the country, 1750-something, beneficial.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
In 1936?
Yes.
Did you get a job?
I immediately started as a carpenter and joiner, apprentice, up to the outbreak of war. Used to go to college, night school first. I passed an exam. I went into the municipal college. I studied hard. And when the war broke out, all the building come to a cease because of the war with Finland and Russia. Most of our timber supplies came from Finland. And I searched high and low. Couldn't get a job anywhere. I took a petrol pump attendant for a few days. And a friend of mine mentioned the Marines, so I went and joined the Marines.
Do you know when you joined up?
Yes, it was April, 8th of April, 40.
Was it easy to get in?
I didn't find it a problem. They asked searching questions, but I was told it would be for a 12-year service, not how I chose. They wouldn't accept I chose at the time. Well, we were ignorant of that. Well, I was only 18, I was 19, 17 actually, when I tried to join. And they took me in on the 8th of April, 40. There was four of us locally. We went to Dill. We met at Dill, and this was more or less during the Battle of Britain. And we training was all non-stop. We used to, every day we'd be up the range or force marching, drilling. And night times we'd stand to, we'd go out to various parts of Kent where Dad's army was being formed at the time. It was known as the LDV. All they had was an armband, local defence volunteers. And we would be dropped in twos here and there until dawn. And then at dawn we'd reassemble, come back to Dill, and we'd go along the seafront where during the night convoys would try to get through during the night from the south up to the east coast or the other way round. And the E-boats would come out from Calais and would fire their torpedoes, and next morning we would find them up on the road, on the beach. And when it was dawn, we'd clear these, everything from dead bodies, bananas, was washed up like with the tides. And we would clear that, then off we'd go to training all day again. And then night time, off we'd go back to on the beach, stood to, and I can remember them saying, "Tonight's the night, they're coming tonight." Expecting the invasion. Till eventually it quietened down. We were sent in, I think it was about September, down to Plymouth for naval gunnery. From naval gunnery, my squad, as it happened, there was four of us from Portsmouth. They decided we should have a Portsmouth number because in the Marines they had three divisions: Chatham, Plymouth, Portsmouth. And as we lived in Portsmouth, they sent us back to Portsmouth to have a Portsmouth number, and all the rest of them went on to done their naval gunnery on an aircraft carrier, and I think they were killed in the early part of the war. So from in Portsmouth, It was air raids on and off. We would stand to every night. And then I got a ship. I was allocated a ship, HMS Manchester. I had to pick her up in Newcastle. And amazing coincidence was, when we arrived in Newcastle, it was raining, pitch black because of the blackout, not knowing the district. We made our way through the dockyard, and I could see the silhouette of two ships. And it was bleak, real bleak, miserable. And someone came off the gangway, and I said, "Is this Manchester?" He said, "No, the Manchester is tied up alongside. This is the Penelope here. She'd just come back from Norway. She'd had some damage done in Norway." Which turned out to be my second ship that they have a year or two afterwards. I went over, joined the Manchester, and it was quite pleasant. Lovely atmosphere on the mess deck, and I enjoyed it. From there, we went out, done naval gunnery, done some shoots in the North Sea, then off up to Scapa Flow. And from Scapa Flow, we went up to the Arctic, where the German weather ships were operating. We used to go around Iceland, all round there, right up to the ice barrier. And our guns was, I'll give you a picture, I've got a picture.
Don't worry about the picture, we'll look at those later. Just go from memory.
We'd operate up there, pull into Iceland we used to get refueled at sea. We were at sea for ages, seemed ages. We returned to Scapa. I remember, I sat down to breakfast one morning, and a chap says, "Here's a telegram for you." And it turned out my father was dying in Hazra. So I tried to get leave. First of all, I saw the sergeant major. He said, you'll have to see the captain of Marines. That's 8 o'clock in the morning. So I put in a request to see the captain of Marines. He said, I can't release you because I was a gunnery mate. I was a loading number on the 4-inch, and they were very short of 4-inch loading numbers. But the lower deck lawyer, one of the old soldiers who put me wise, he said, "You put in and see the Admiral if it's necessary." So I put in to see Commander at 9 o'clock. Now at 9 o'clock, I dressed up a bit more each time, saw the Commander, a requestman, tried to get leave, dad dying. "No," he says. So I said, "Could I see the Captain?" Now, you only saw the captain twice a week. That was Tuesdays and Thursdays. And this happened to be one of them days. So I said, "Can I see the captain?" So I dressed up a bit more. And he said no. So I said, "Can I see the Admiral?" He said, "Certainly." He said, 2 o'clock this afternoon, be in the torpedo space." So I dressed up in the number ones. And while I'm waiting there, the cable party went. That is the bugle call for leaving harbour. What I didn't know, none of us knew, was the Bismarck had just come out. And I could hear the ship's engines revving up. Oh, almighty, we was doing about 30 knots below and nothing on top. You drop everything at cable party. I was one of four that used to get down the cable locker up to, as the chains come in, we would heave them round, sort of arrange some order out of it. And there's me in my number one uniform, bringing in this chain with mud, seaweed, crabs, the lot, winding in. And then I had to report straight up to my gun. And we weren't told what was happening, but it turned out that we was, to my knowledge, I didn't even know the Bismarck. Well, none of us knew the Bismarck was there. We just shot up to the side of Iceland. And from what I've learned afterwards, we was patrolling between the Faroes and Iceland, where the Bismarck was, would either come through there or in the north of Iceland, come around the Denmark Straits. Next, you could hear a pin drop aboard us as the commander said, or the captain, he said, "Do you hear it?" Pardon me. He said, "Do you hear there?" He said, "The hood has been sunk." And you could hear a pin drop apart from the engines. We looked, we couldn't believe it, because only a few days before, I'd been on meat party on the hood. I was went over to get our ship's allocation of meat, and as I went up the side of the hood, I got on the side where there was a meat boat unloading the meat, and various ships used to pick it up from there. I looked up forward, I see them playing deck hockey, and the Marines band aft, and I thought, oh, well, I wish I was on a ship like this. Not knowing that a couple of days later she'd be gone. So, anyhow, off we. After the hood was sunk, I don't know what happened then. We just was at sea, and we wouldn't even told the Bismarck was sunk, to my memory. We pulled into Glasgow, we'd run out of fuel, and we had to go into there, and there we loaded up with. I noticed them sticking Oerlikon guns on all over the place. They were a new thing at the time, anti-aircraft 20 millimetres. And there we took a convoy down to Gibraltar, and we had, I don't know if we had the soldiers, yes, I think we had the soldiers, we had about 700 soldiers taking them to Malta. On the, so we left Gib. Funny thing, a little funny incident I'll never forget. As a first day eight, night eight, we closed up looking for U-boats. We had U-boat lookouts all over around the ship. And my allocation, we had to leave the gun for our stint because it was quite a strain on the eyes. I would go up to do my position, and I met with a young boy seaman who come from some other part of the ship, I didn't know. And I just got in there, and the chap from the bridge shouts down, he said, "Senior Ann, starboard submarine, how many ships in a convoy can you see?" And look, quit in the swirling haze, 1 minute you might see two, next minute three. There are two, sir. And next, then a couple of minutes later, he said the same again. But with that, this young Scotch kid, he said, "F-all." And called the commander on the bridge, he'd done his nut. And he said, "Senior Rand, report to the bridge immediately." So I'd never been up there before, so I went up on the bridge and we was rolling. I eventually found it through the blackout, and there was these stark screens. He said, oh, he ignored me for a moment. He just paced up and down with the officer at the watch, and then he was a very tall chap. He must have been about 6 foot seven, 6 foot eight. He was the son of Dudley Payne, the admiral in London, the top-notch admiral. Very well-spoken, Oxford accent. And he looked down at me, and he said, "You the senior hands, starboard sausage, yes, sir." He said, "For all you care..." He said, "A U-boat could come up onto the quarterdeck, have a tea party, and you would know F all about it." And I'll get off back. But that's a little... anyway, we carried on. Next day, we spotted by aircraft and German reconnaissance plane, and so we stood to rain the gun. I don't know if it was that day or the next day. Over they came, these bombers. They caught us, rather, because they sent over first the high-flying ones. They were little silver specks in the sky, and we had our guns at maximum elevation. And they were difficult to load when you're maximum, because the guns are pointing practically vertical, and you have to get underneath and push them up the spate, so to speak. And we'd had three loading numbers each gun, and we had ready use locker close by. And we firing away up at these high level, And while we were doing that, these torpedo bombers come skimming along the surface, and the next, I saw them going up and down the lines for the convoy. And then I saw the Fearless blow up. Whoosh! And the next, we took an almighty explosion. And from then, I can remember, it was a bit chaotic. What with the guns firing, they started bringing eight bodies right behind our gun, dragging them out, and where we... where the bilges, the oil had been damaged, down below all this diesel oil, and they was bringing out the dead beyond our gun, dragging them absolutely saturated through the oil, and they lined all the dead up. We had a job because when the guns fire, you get the cylinders eject and you kick them aside, so that you could hardly move the dead bodies and cylinders everywhere. And there was a stoppage in a minute, for a moment, firing, which gave us time to fling the cylinders over the side and get the dead bodies, stick them under Pennis's boats, which was on the boat deck. And then we were gradually going over, and they said, all left guns crew don life jackets. So we wear them tied around our respirators at the time. And so I put mine on, and a chap from the other gun, he said, Smithy, undo mine, will you? Because I'd finished mine a bit quick. I'd got my life jacket on. And I couldn't undo the knot on his. I can remember trying to undo this knot. I'm holding a shell, and so I puts one foot onto his respirator, and I pulls it, and I snap the cords of his life jacket. So he had a life jacket with no cords on it. Which, looking back, rather comical. It wasn't comical at the time. And so many things seem to happen. Then all we started firing again, and funny enough, there's a chap lives. That's an amazing coincidence. This is we were four and a half maximum, and we already used locker had been flooded, so we had not ready use. Our 4-inch supply from down below was flooded, so all we had was the ammunition we had on the upper deck, and we got down to 3 rounds. So we kept them off with 6-inch. Oh, meanwhile, we started going round in circle because our rudder steering had been affected and the convoy disappeared and we were going round in circles. So I believe I was told, I think a corporal de gangway, a corporal got over the side and did something to counter one ship's propeller that was working with a rudder. And we crawled along. We managed to make off in Gibraltar direction because we'd never got through the strait that night because we were just crawling along. Oh, I was going to... back would come the planes. So I would have to... we had 3 reins left and I was holding one of them. And I decided to keep them off with 6-inch. And I would follow the gun. When the planes came on the port side, I would have to dash down. That was a problem because the ship's deck covered in oil. I had a job to stop. I would dash down to the other gun and slide up to there. And I'd follow the gun round as it came from maximum aft till it went forward. We wouldn't fire, I kept them off to the last minute. Then I'd have to try to get uphill to this gun again. Anyhow, that was an episode. But anyhow, we did eventually get back to Gibraltar. And we put all the 700 troops... Oh, they put all the troops on one side to help even the ship up a bit. And we got to Gibraltar. They put them all on the Manxman. And she went through, took them through that night. But meanwhile, we got patched up and went to America. Directly you leave port, you're never told where you're going. And we zigzagged at sea, just crawling along. And it was after about 5 days, we were predominantly going east. So I said to the chaps on the gun, I said, yeah, I reckon we're going to America or Canada. And by a coincidence, with a very short time afterwards, the captain says, do you hear there? The ship is going to United States for repairs. So we went to Philadelphia. And he said, but from now on, you won't be known as the Manchester. You will be known as the S-163. The S-163, we had that, because they weren't in the war at the time, and because of security, everything was security. We got into Philadelphia. We didn't have any American money, so we weren't allowed at the dockyard. But most of us, if we weren't on watch, we was allowed to walk around the dockyard. So, but we had to dress up. So I went for a stroll, and their dockyards are different. 2 hours, they were more like gardens, they were. I went for a stroll down the road, and I saw three chaps in the distance. They turned out to be American Marines on guard on the gatehouse, but I never realised, I thought I was just walking around the dockyard. Without knowing it, these Yanks come out, salutes me, and I salute back and carries on walking, and I find myself outside the dockyard, and I picked out of a bin, and because I had no American money, I picked a bin, and the headlines, HMS Manchester in Philadelphia. There's your security. See, it's amazing. There's us brainwashed. Anyhow, we stayed there. I played football. I was the ship centre forward, and we had some interesting stories. I had to meet millionaires. Oh, my name got put in the paper. I don't know if this is interesting.
Yes, carry on.
I love football, and in the first game or first couple of games, I found scoring goals was easy. It was easy, and I used to score a lot of goals. And the next time, though, my name was in the paper right there. I've got cutting somewhere, haven't I? It says, Ken Smith, former Oxford University star, won letters at rowing, soccer, track. I don't know how it got there, but this is the type of stuff they wanted to put over to the Americans, that it took the very elite of the British to beat theirs, college teams. And so after that, my name went in the newspapers everywhere I went for about 5 months. Oxford, I was an Oxford University star, and my sergeant major made me keep this up. And I had to meet him. When he read about it, he phoned up the ship. He wanted our team to come up and play his team in Wilmington, Delaware. So I went to Delaware. I had to meet his daughter. She'd been to Oxford, Paris, Berlin. And that was embarrassed. I got so embarrassed, and I had to run off out the toilets and lock myself in. But, anyhow, when we left Yankee Land, we went down to Bermuda, Chesapeake Bay, then Bermuda for trials, gunnery trials. Came back to England, and I think it was one of the worst storms. It must have gone through that Bermuda time. I never thought we'd get out of it, because we must have turned, it seemed to me, 1 minute, I felt I could touch the water. And then we would rise, and we'd go so far back, I'd be holding like this, to stop going over backwards. And at the same time, the ship was pitching and tossing, and so much of the ship had come out of water, you'd hear a crack as the bows hit. Anyhow, I thought we was lucky to get through that. Came back, I paid off, come back to Portsmouth. Paid off, and I had to go for another gunnery course. So I was going through for captain of the gun on the 4-inch. So I went out to Eastney, done a QR3's course. And while I was there, I think this air raid was on, and I got detailed to go to Asler to after. Not the St. Nazaire, the
Dieppe raid?
Dieppe raid, yeah. That was a bit of a shock. They filled up 2 lorry loads of Marines to go over. All we knew, we was going to Asler. What for, we didn't know. And as I jumped off the lorry, my boot was undone. So they all jumped off and seemed to be running off in that direction. And I quickly done up my boot, and I followed where they'd gone through. And it hit me. I shall never forget this. I'd run straight into the mortuary with the Dieppes of all those Diep dead, and they were stacked high, bloated, black, and the smell was terrible. I think that was my first real shock of the war. You know, I was in amongst all these dead bodies, loads of them, and we went out the back. I forget what we'd done. Oh, I don't know who we buried or. From the funny, I just can't remember what happened after that. Whether we formed anyhow that
was that Dieppe or Saint-Nazaire?
It's Dieppe. Yeah, must have been Dieppe.
That was August 1942.
Was it? It might have been.
Was it summer?
When I came back from Yankee Land, or
Saint-Nazaire was in the spring and. Dieppe was in August. So what was the season? Was it spring or summer?
Come back from Yankee Land. I usually work backwards from this onwards. For the Bismarck was in May 41. We come back. July. We come back. That'd be 42, wouldn't it? Yeah, we come back to Christmas 42, early part of 42, somewhere.
Well, Saint-Nazaire was in the early part of 42.
That could have been that then. Yeah, it could have been. So, I'd done the gunnery course, and then I got detailed for the Penelope up Scapa Flow. So, off I went up to Scapa Flow, and amazing coincidence, as my squad mate happened to be leaning over the side. He was welcomed me aboard. From there, from Scapa, we took a convoy down to Gib, and I think that was. Yeah, we went straight to Marcel Bukabur, Iran, Algiers. That was for the Torch, wasn't it?
Operation Torch.
Torch, yes. And we was continually at sea then, up and down the. Bone, Philippeville, we were at guard ships up to Bizerta. You know, Bizerta hadn't been captured at the time, but we'd be out at sea bombarding Sicily and the right Naples area. I remember we went one night to bombard a tunnel near Naples. Then came, we had a game of football, a Skylark game of football in Philippeville. And the Marines played the Stokers. It was just on the side of the ship, and in a Skylark, I was like the only Marine in the ship's team, and these two Stokers, there was a goalkeeper. For a Skylark, they come and cracked me up against the wall, so I fractured my wrist. From there, I had to go ashore to the Hannibal because I couldn't operate the gun. I went to the Hannibal back in Algiers. 6 weeks there, and it was just at the tail end of that 6 weeks they invaded Sicily. When I went to pick up the ship, I went back to Malta, and Penelope just came in from Catania, doing up Catania and Syracuse. Loaded up with grapes and stuff, all that was lovely, seeing this fresh fruit. And after that, I just picked her up, and there was a little gap. I forget what happened in this time, but next was the capitulation. We thought it was all over when the Italians.